Good morning and welcome to the Albany Report. I'm your host, former State Senator Cecilia Kacik, and today we're going to be talking about Labor Day. It's Labor Day, and the sun, here comes the sun. It's going to be really hot today. And so this was a great intro, Here Comes the Sun by the Beatles. But today, since it's Labor Day, I thought we would spend the hour talking about the role women played in the labor movement and talk about some history and play some songs. And in the studio with me is Neva Wartell, our producer, who's going to help me cue up the songs and make sure I don't break anything. I still can't figure out how to run the board. So thank you, Neva, for helping me make this an awesome Labor Day. I hope everyone's enjoying the Labor Day weekend and spending time with family and friends. But give a moment to remember the hardworking men and women for whom the labor movement, relied on to make things work. And even though today's a major holiday, it's important to recognize that there are still people working today, especially in the stores. When you go to get a sales item, thank the person behind the cash register for, making your holiday work. And years ago, the first Labor Day holiday was celebrated on Tuesday, September 5th, 1882, in New York City. The Central Labor Union of New York had the first Labor Day parade. Some 10,000 workers marched from City Hall to Union Square in New York City. And a few years later, the first state bill commemorating Labor Day was introduced right here in New York State by the New York State Legislature in 1887. And later that year, the state passed a bill to commemorate Labor Day. By 1894, 23 other states had adopted the holiday to honor workers. And on June 28th of 1894, Congress passed an act making the first Monday in September of each year a legal holiday. And that's how the holiday got started. But as I said, we're going to change up our program a bit and recognize women and the role they played in the labor movement. And music was an inspiring tool that people used to energize weary workers, because not only were they toiling in fields and toiling in factories and working under sometimes horrific conditions and long hours and for low pay, they also had to find the energy to change the system and rise up and make policy changes so that they would have better working conditions so that they could take care of their families. So we're going to play some songs and learn about some amazing women in our labor history. And if you have a song or an artist you want to hear on the show, you can give us a call in the studio at 518-828-0290. Neva will take your phone call and we will get your song queued up. I want to start with Sojourner Truth. This is a woman who has done so much in her lifetime. She was born into slavery in 1797. Her original name was Isabella Bounfrey. She later changed her name to Sojourner Truth, and she became one of the most powerful advocates for human rights in the 19th century. As many people know her story, she grew up on a New York estate owned by a Dutch American named Colonel Johannes Hardenberg. And like other slaves, she experienced the misery of being sold, was cruelly beaten and mistreated. And she fell in love with a fellow slave in 1815, but she was forced to be apart from him. She was separated. She was instead forced to marry someone else, another slave named Thomas, with whom she had five children, and later she had more. In 1827, after her master failed to honor her promise to free her to uphold the New York anti-slavery law of 1827, Isabella ran away, or as she later informed her master, "I did not run away, I walked away by daylight." She experienced a religious conversion and became an itinerant preacher, and in 1843 changed her name to Sojourner Truth. If you go to the Ulster County Courthouse, you'll see a plaque one of the things she did, she could not read or write because she was not educated, but she could speak. She went to the Ulster County Courthouse and fought to free her son, whose name was Peter, from slavery. And it's just an amazing story because she could only use her words, because she couldn't read the law, she couldn't write. And using her words, she fought for her son's freedom and won that case. She became very involved in the anti-slavery movement, and by the 1850s was also involved in the women's right movement. And at the 1851 Women's Right Convention held in Akron, Ohio, Sojourner Truth delivered what is clearly, I think, now recognized as one of the most famous abolitionist and women's rights speeches in American history, called Ain't I a Woman? And that's what we're going to play now. This is Ain't I a Woman? This is a rendition of her speech given by Carrie Washington. Let's listen to Sojourner Truth.
Here, the black abolitionist Sojourner Truth, who was herself freed from slavery in 1827, speaks to a gathering of feminists in Akron, Ohio in 1851.
Well, children, where there is so much racket, there must be something out of kilter. I think that twixt the Negroes of the South and the women at the North, all talking about rights, the white man will be in a fix pretty soon. But what's all this here talking about? That man over there says that women need to be helped into carriages, lifted over ditches, and to have the best place everywhere. Huh. Nobody ever helps me into carriages. Or over mud puddles, or gives me any best place. And ain't I a woman? Look at me. Look at my arm. I have plowed and planted and gathered into barns, and no man could head me. And ain't I a woman? I could work as much and eat as much as a man when I could get it. And bear the lash as well. And ain't I a woman? I have borne 13 children and seen most all sold off to slavery. And when I cried out with my mother's grief, none but Jesus heard me. And ain't I a woman? Then they talk about this thing in the head. What's this they call it? Intellect. That's right, honey. Well, what's that got to do with women's rights or Negroes' rights? If my cup won't hold but a pint and yours holds a quart, wouldn't you be mean not to let me have my little half measure full? Then that little man there in the black, he says women can't have much rights as men because Christ wasn't a woman. Well, where did your Christ come from? Where did your Christ come from? From God and a woman. Man had nothing to do with him. If the first woman God ever made was strong enough to turn the world upside down all alone, these women together ought to be able to turn it back and get it right side up again. And now they's asking to do it. The men better let them.
That was Sojourner Truth in her speech, Ain't I a Woman? And I get goosebumps every time I hear that. Another famous woman who was very involved in the labor movement was Mary Harris Jones, also known as Mother Jones. She was clearly a union activist. She was born in Ireland, grew up in Toronto, and moved to Chicago. She was born in 1830. She had some early personal tragedy. Her husband and four small children died during a yellow fever outbreak. After that, her home was burned in a Chicago fire. And destitute, she turned to the Knights of Labor for help. She became a seamstress and worked for wealthy women in their homes, and would sit in front of these huge glass windows sewing garments for the women of the house. And she could see outside the window destitute people walking along the shore of the Great Lake, Chicago, the lake around Chicago. Forget the name of it. Anyway, she had a real problem with this disconnect of, you know, wealth and poverty, and she decided to help out. She got very involved with the United Mine Workers and was given the nickname Mother Jones. And she was very soft-spoken, but her voice resonated, and she was very good at giving speeches. We don't have a speech from her era, but there was a lot written about her. And one of the things she was called was the most dangerous woman by politicians of the time, because she inspired men, and she inspired a lot of women. So when she would go and help a labor movement or issue or work or strike, she would get the women involved in helping to support the striking workers. So we have a song called The Most Dangerous Woman. It's sung by Annie DeFranco and Utah Phillips from the album Fellow Workers. So this is a song called The Most Dangerous Woman, Mother Jones.
I was traveling through Illinois when I was invited to stop and sing at a memorial there in the little town of Mount Olive. Now, who of note in American history is buried in the cemetery in Mount Olive, Illinois? I'll give you a hint. It was a woman. It was the Union Miners Cemetery. Do you have it yet? Mary Harris Jones, Mother Jones. It's hard for the mind to encompass a life that embraced the presidencies between Andrew Jackson and Herbert Hoover. Why, when Mother Jones was a little girl, there were people still alive who remembered the Revolutionary War. And she died on the eve of the New Deal. Her millinery shop burned down in the Chicago fire, and she had heard Abraham Lincoln speak in person. Mostly, though, Mother Jones was the miner's friend. Down in Kentucky, Tennessee, West Virginia. Well, the men would be organizing the underground workers, the miners. Mother Jones had already organized their wives and led them over the snow-covered game trails down into the Hollis, where, armed with mops and brooms, they drove the scabs out of the coal pits. Now, Mother Jones wasn't an organizer, she was an agitator, which meant often enough she was hated as much by the organizers as by the bosses. One time, Mother Jones was out in Colorado at the great Ludlow strike. Now, that was a strike to enforce the 8-hour day, which the state of Colorado had made a law, but they couldn't enforce it because Rockefeller owned the militia. Now, the governor promised not to send the militia into the coal fields, but he lied, and he did. Mother Jones was in the Union Hall down there at Ludlow, and word came that the militia had entered the coal fields. Well, she leapt up, and she screamed, "Let's go get the sons of bitches!" And she stormed out. She didn't look to see if anybody was following her. Nobody was following her. She just flounced up the road alone and confronted the militia. And that was the year that President Theodore Roosevelt called Mother Jones the most dangerous woman in America. And she was 83 years old. That's some kind of dangerous. Thank you.
And that was The Most Dangerous Woman, Mother Jones. Mother Jones also inspired a magazine today called Mother Jones. I think it's a monthly, and they do a lot of in-depth articles about issues important to working men and women. And I think that's a great periodical I get on occasion. We got a request from Elizabeth for the song Union Maid. It's a union song. The lyrics were written by Woody Guthrie, and it was in response to a request that they have a union song from the female point of view. So we are going to listen to Pete Seeger and a group of singers singing Union Maid. Well, let's hear what it is. Here's Union Maid.
There once was a union maid. She never was afraid of the goons and the ginks and the company thinks and the deputy sheriff that made the raid. She went to the union hall when a meeting it was called. When the company boys come around, she always stood her ground. Oh, you can't scare me. I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union. Oh, you can't scare me. I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union till the day I die. This union maid was wise to the tricks of the company spies. She'd never be fooled by a company stool. She'd always organize the guys. She'd always get her way. When she asked for better pay, she'd show her card to the company guard. And this is what she'd say. Oh, you can't scare me. I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union. Oh, you can't scare me. I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union till the day I die. Now, you girls want to be free? Take a little tip from me. Get you a man who's a union man and join the ladies' auxiliary. Married life ain't hard if you got a union card. And a union man has a happy life if he's got a union wife. Oh, you can't scare me. I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union. Oh, you can't scare me. I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union till the day I die. Oh, the ladies' auxiliary is a good auxiliary. It's the best auxiliary that you ever did see. If you need an auxiliary, see the ladies' auxiliary. It's the ladies' auxiliary.
And that was Pete Seeger singing Union Maid. We're going to move on to another famous song that highlighted women and their role in creating better working conditions. It's called Bread and Roses. Bread and Roses was also a political slogan, as well as the name of a poem and song. And it's often associated with the successful textile strike in Lawrence, Massachusetts in 1912, known as the Bread and Roses Strike. And the phrase Bread and Roses appealed for both fair wages and dignified working conditions. It originated from a speech given by Rose Schneiderman. A line in the speech was, the worker must have bread, but she must have roses too. And that inspired the poem Bread and Roses, written by James Oppenheim. And it was first published in the American Magazine in 1911. The poem was written to celebrate the movement for women's rights, and it's still sung today. We have a version sung by Judy Collins called Bread and Roses, and let's listen to Judy.
We go marching, marching in the beauty of the day. Amen. Discloses for the people here. roses. Hearts starve as well as bodies. Give us bread, but give us roses. As we go marching, marching, unnumbered women dead go crying through our singing their ancient call for bread. Small arms and love and beauty, their grudging spirits new. Yes, it is bread we fight for, but we fight for roses too.
Beautiful rendition of Bread and Roses by Judy Collins. And you can hear the women marching on the street singing that song. And women faced often terrible working conditions and low wages in factories around the turn of the century, especially in New York City. There were over 500 factories with women sitting at equipment, sewing machines, spinning machines, creating textiles and then sewing them. And a lot of the work was done by women. And women stood up for themselves and said, we are not going to tolerate this. One of the things that occurred is that women working in the factories formed an allegiance with wealthy women who saw what was happening and wanted to do something about it, and that created the Women's Trade Union League. It was seen as a partnership between middle-class reformers and working-class women to raise wages and improve working conditions. It was founded in Boston in 1903, and often you would have these wealthy women join the working-class women on the picket lines, and that way it helped raise the information about what was happening. The press paid attention, and the police weren't as eager to beat the strikers if there were well-to-do aristocrats marching along with them. But women initiated many strikes at the beginning of the 20th century, including the rising of 20,000 shirtwaist workers in 1909 and 1910. And that was around the same time as the Bread and Roses strike of textile workers in Lawrence, Massachusetts. In New York, in 1909, the shirtwaist workers struck after unionist Clara Lemlich called for a general strike, and they all walked out, 20,000 of them. Most of them were women, and the WTUL provided assistance to the workers. They donated money. They helped feed their families. They spoke to the press, and as I said, they participated in the picket lines. A lot of improvement did occur. Many of the factories agreed to improved wages. Some of the factories approved allowing the women to organize into a union, and one of the things that came out of that was the International Ladies' Garment Workers Union, and became a force to be reckoned with. But it wasn't an easy process, and in some factories they made better progress than others. Women at the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory were involved in the strike, and after months of striking, they got higher wages and reduced hours, but they did not have win the right to organize a union, and so they couldn't continue to work on the working conditions at the factory, which were pretty abhorrent. These women worked in the upper floors of a multi-story building on the 9th and 10th floor, where the sewing machines were. And the factory had a fire in 1911, and many women died, and the fire prompted some of the most sweeping and comprehensive labor laws in the United States. The appalling conditions were clearly led to the many deaths at the time. And I'm going to read the numbers of those impacted. 145 died in the fire. All but 23 of them were women. Half of that number were teenagers. 53 jumped or fell from their windows. 19 fell in the elevator shaft. 20 fell off the fire escape, because so many were climbing onto the fire escape, it pulled away from the building, and they fell to the ground, to their death. At least 50 burned to death on the factory floor. One jumper survived the jump from the 9th floor, but later died. She was a 16-year-old sewing operator. One of the problems was the owners of the factory locked the door. There were two exits. One was locked because they wanted the women to only go out one exit so they could inspect their purses to make sure they weren't bringing any of the finished garments home with them. And that exit was blocked by the fire. So these women were trapped in a building with locked doors. And when the fire department, the local fire brigade came, their ladders could only reach the 6th floor. They couldn't reach the women in the upper floors. And they subsequently jumped, and they had these nets, but they went right through the nets. It was a horrific, horrific event, and something that I think it's important that, you know, we remember this occurred. And it was during the summertime, where it was nice out, and there were a lot of people. It was a Saturday. The women were working that Saturday, but a lot of families and people were out around, milling about and enjoying the day, and over 1,000 people gathered around the building, the Shirtwaist Factory building, as the fire was going on, and watched this in horror. So it was something that the public could not walk away from and do nothing about. The owners were acquitted, and they took their insurance settlement money and kind of faded away. They couldn't prove that the exit door was locked during the time of the fire. And I mean, it was just known to be locked. But public policy stepped in. The public was no longer tolerant of the market system in policing itself and the safety conditions. In the aftermath, the New York State Legislature funded a factory safety commission, which held months of hearings and inspected over 2,000 factories. Within 2 years, the commission spurred the passage of 30 new laws, setting minimum wage laws, maximum hour rules, child labor laws. Remember, a lot of those women who died were children, and addressed all of the safety failures that occurred at the Shirtwaist Factory. So it became one of the sweeping factory safety laws and movements, and New York became a model. Samuel Gompers, who was a labor leader at the time, was quoted as saying, "Rarely do you get such an opportunity for legislative reform, but women had to die first in order for this to happen." We're going to play a song about the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory. It's sung by Mike Stout and the Human Union, and they relate it to more modern time conditions at factories. And, you know, when you look at what's occurring today around the world, we still have fires in factories, and women are still dying. Here's Mike Stout and the Human Union.
There they were, screaming from the windows, trapped like a herd, nowhere to go. The eighth and ninth floors, facing an inferno of heat and flames, a living horror show. Young immigrants, just trying to earn a living, brutally exploited in a place so unforgiving. One door was locked, the other was blocked. The elevator crashed, the fire escape collapsed. Choking from the smoke, unable to breathe. The fire engines came, but the ladders didn't reach. They started jumping, you could hear the thuds. 62 pools of mangled limbs and blood. 129 women, 17 men. Never see their friends or their family again. When you don't have a union, you don't have a chance. Death and injury will come to dance. The owners, Blank and Harris, were arrested and tried. With money and slick lawyers, justice was denied. But when the dead were buried, 100,000 came. The New Deal was born, it was time for a change. The Triangle Shirtwaist Fire was a call. Wake up a movement, they died for us all. For a safer workplace and escape from poverty. Decent living wage, a life with dignity. Fight for the living, mourn for the dead. It's time to do what Mother Jones said. It's either race to the bottom or take the struggle higher. Don't let the lesson be forgotten of the shirtwaist fire. Triangle shirtwaist fire. On the frontiers of the global wilderness, at the humming factory inside Bangladesh, a mirror image from a century before, a fire escape, locked and blocked doors, jumping from the windows of wage slavery, down into the sidewalks of eternity. The causes unknown that can be ignored, another callous owner like all the ones before. 28 more who didn't have to die. On the altars of greed, it's just another sacrifice. Working for the Gap, Walmart and the rest. Places like Honduras, China, Bangladesh. 28 cents an hour, 7 days a week. A prison tower in a sweatshop factory. Behind the fancy clothes and toys they want to sell ya. Hundreds of fires they just don't tell ya. After decades of struggle, made things better than before. They shut them down and move their jobs offshore. Out of sight, out of mind. They hope we never stop them. Well, they wage their class war and take us to the bottom. The Triangle Shirtwaist Fire was a call. Wake up a movement, they died for us all. For a safer workplace and escape from poverty. A decent living wage, a life with dignity. Fight for the living, mourn for the dead. It's time to do what Mother Jones said. See the race to the bottom, or take this battle higher. Don't let the lesson be forgotten. Don't let the message be forgotten.
Don't let the lesson be forgotten. That was the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory Fire by Mike Stout and the Human Union, and kind of essentially giving us the message that this happened, and it happened because working conditions were horrific, and sweatshops still occur today. Not in this country so much, because we have laws protect those workers, but in other countries. And when companies go offshore to produce products, we should ask, where is it from? What are the working conditions? Because is it really the price that we want to pay for those garments? Something to remember as we go shopping this Labor Day weekend. We're gonna. We got a request for Hazel Dickens. She was an amazing singer. I'm gonna play actually two of her songs. She had family members who worked in the coal mines, and she was an American bluegrass singer. She was born in 1935 and died in 2011. One person noted that her style was, Dickens didn't just sing the anthems of labor, she lived them, and her place on many a picket line, staring down gunfire and goon squads, embedded her in the cause. So we are going to listen to Hazel Dickens as she sings Fire in the Hole.
Tell them in the country, tell them in the town. The miners down in Mingo laid their shovels down. We won't pull another pillow, load another ton, or lift another finger till the union we have won. Stand up, boys, let the bosses know. Turn your buckets over, turn your lanterns low. There's fire in her hearts and fire in her soul, but there ain't gonna be no fire in the hole. Daddy died a miner, Grandpa he did too. I'll bet this coal will kill me before my working days is through. In a hole that's dark and dirty, an early grave confined, I plan to make a union for the ones I leave behind. Stand up, boys, let the bosses know. Turn your buckets over, turn your lanterns low. There's fire in our hearts and fire in our soul, but there ain't gonna be no fire in the hole. There ain't gonna be no fire in the hole.
And that was Hazel Dickens, Fire in the Hole. And Hazel was one of the first women to record a bluegrass album. So she was a leader in a field of men and clearly rose to the occasion. I have another song by Hazel Dickens that I want to play. It's called Black Lung. And in this version, she sings a cappella, a song that she wrote about her brother. And she talks about why she wrote the song. So there's a little intro in the beginning, and then she sings the song that she wrote. This is Black Lung by Hazel Dickens.
One of the most powerful songwriters is a woman whose father was a preacher from Bluefield, West Virginia, Virginia border. and who's written more songs that are more powerful, speaking of struggle and change, than any other person we know here at Highlander. And her name is Hazel Dickens. Let's make her welcome.
It was very astounding to me to learn later on, after I got away from home, I left when I was 16 to go to work, that one of my brothers, my oldest brother, had lived his entire life and never got any further than he did when he first started out as a teenager in the mines. And he lived his whole life, had six children, and he died with not enough to even bury himself. And we had to go to the welfare to get enough to bury him. And it just seemed like that in a country like this, that people shouldn't have to live and be buried as poor as when they came into the world. And that was the first that I began questioning the way the economy is in this world and the way that poor people are treated. So this is a song that I wrote for my brother so that he would have some kind of a voice in this world. He's had more hard luck than most men could stand. The mines was his first love, but never his friend. He's lived a hard life, and hard he'll die. Black lungs done got him, his time is nigh. Black lung, you're just biding your time. Soon all this suffering I'll leave behind, but I can't help but wonder what God had in mind to send such a devil to claim this soul of mine. He went to the boss man, but he closed the door. Well, it seems you're not wanted when you're sick and you're poor. You're not even covered in their medical plans, and your life depends on the favors of man. Down in the poorhouse on starvation's plan, where pride is a stranger and doomed is a man, his soul full of coal dust till his body's decayed. And everyone but Black Lungs done turned him away. Black Lung, you're just biding your time. Soon all this suffering I'll leave behind. But I can't help but wonder what God had in mind to send such a devil to claim this soul of mine. Down at the graveyard, the boss man came with his little bunch of flowers. Dear God, what a shame. Take back those flowers. Don't you sing those sad songs. The die has been cast now. A good man is gone. Thank you.
Wow.
That was Hazel Dickens singing Black Lung and speaking in her own words about why she wrote that song and about her brother who died of black lung. Coal mining was dangerous, and she spent her life fighting for better working conditions for the miners. And issues are still a struggle today. These types of songs really help us remember what it was like in those times and the struggles people went through to get the safety conditions and labor laws and issues like that resolved. It was not easy, and many people died in the process. I'm going to switch gears a little bit, and one of the things that I kind of acknowledged at the beginning was women's suffrage. Women didn't have the right to vote. They were disenfranchised. And when women fought for the right to vote, one of the things that I hadn't realized until I did a little research was women were not allowed to speak in public. It was frowned upon. So not only were women not given the right to vote, it was difficult even to speak out and talk about it. There is a group called, I forget what it was called, but they did a video for the women's suffrage movement. It's called Caught in a Bad Romance, and it takes a parody of Lady Gaga's Bad Romance song, and they made a music video paying homage to Alice Paul and the generations of brave women who joined together in the fight to pass the 19th Amendment, which gave women the right to vote in 1920. It received an Emmy for Best Informational Instructional Program. I think it's called SUMA is the company that made it. So let's hear Bad Romance, Caught in a Bad Romance, which was directed by Tim Alden Grant and written by Emilia Fuentes Grant.
Oh, to liberty, child health, wealth, and property. Hey. We'll raise our banner across this land. Cause franchise isn't just the right of a man. You never saw. Yeah, you never saw.
You know we don't want to take freedoms from you. Just want our rights and nothing less.
We cry for freedom.
You're psycho, I think that is sick. I'm queen of my home, raise my babies, that's it. Don't need to vote.
No, she don't want to vote.
The rights of citizens shall not be denied
new
or abridged by
baby.
The United States on account of sex.
We cry for freedom.
Oh,
fighting for our rights. We may just start greatness for the ages. Freedom, it is contagious. March, march, be courageous. Fighting for our rights. We may just start greatness for the ages. Remember the ladies.
Not to be above, but equal to all men. We only ask to be part of this union. Comme dirait le français, c'est démocratie. Permettez-moi participer. I'm a citizen of this nation. Suffrage.
That was Caught in a Bad Romance, a music video directed by Tim Aldrin Grant and written by Emilia Fuentes Grant, and it's worth watching the video. It's really I think entertaining and a lot of fun, and I can't get that song out of my head. And I don't know if people realize New York State was one of the first states to vote for suffrage. In 1917, they passed a resolution. So coming up in 2017, we'll actually be celebrating the 100th anniversary of the right to vote here in New York State, although it wasn't ratified and added to the Constitution until 1920. And women fought many years for the right to vote. It was a struggle that took like 50 years. So I hope you enjoyed our program. And it's my way to thank all the women and men who came before us to help us gain better working conditions, decent salaries, and time off to spend with our families. And without their struggles, we would not enjoy those things today. So while you're out there enjoying Labor Day, please remember why we have these rights today and how people fought for those rights. We're going to end with a song by Sweet Honey in the Rock called More Than a Paycheck. And we will see you next time on the Albany Report. Here's Sweet Honey in the Rock.
Bring more than a paycheck to our loved ones and families. We bring more than a paycheck to our loved ones and families. We bring more than a paycheck to our loved ones and families. More than a paycheck to our loved ones and families. We bring more than a paycheck to our loved ones and families. We bring more than a paycheck to our loved ones and families.
I wanted more. Pay, but what I've got here today is more than I bargained for. When I walk through that door, I bring home asbestosis and silicosis, long, long, black, long disease. And radiation hits the children before they've really been conceived. We bring more than a paycheck to our loved ones and families. We bring more than a paycheck to our loved ones and families. I wanted more than a paycheck, but what I've got here today is more than I bargained for. When I walk through that door, I bring home asbestosis and silicosis, around long black lung disease, and radiation hits the children before they've really been conceived.
We bring more than just that little picture.
You're bringing more than